every one of my Space Marine armies was built to have one of those options.
Webway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined in this segment by Adam Camilleri.
Yo, hey.
Scheduling is being what it is. Red may be joining us later. Tanya is going to be with us in a community spotlight segment we're going to have a little bit later. We actually have a couple of community spotlight segments specifically around demons. We mentioned that last week about people that have been playing demons for a long time, been doing very well with them, and they're kind of their opinions of this book that they've been
exactly
what they
right.
know so far.
And yeah, I mean, the scheduling for this week's been a bit awkward. You're off to Nova this weekend, mate.
I will. By the time people are hearing this, I will most likely be live on the Warhammer Twitch site talking about the Nova Open, bringing coverage.
Mate, and it's a big deal to have Nova back. It's the first one in 3 years.
Yes, it is.
That's awesome. And Nova's been such a long-standing, you know, venerable foundation event for the North American scene.
To some folks, it's awesome to have it back. Their Super Bowl. You know, this is something they plan for. They want to go to. I think it's going to be a great time. It'll be actually my first one.
Really? That's very surprising because it's on your coast, yeah? I'm not sure how far the distance is, but...
technically, yes. But it is, you know, 9 hours away, 10 hours away.
Fair. By flight or by drive?
Oh, no, it's driving. Driving.
Yeah.
It's a simple flight. It is an hour and a half in the air.
Fair. But yeah, it should be a really exciting thing. I wish Demons was available. Demons not available to play at Nova yet because they're coming out kind of the day.
No, I think the tournament starts on Friday. It would be unfair to let these Demon players start on Saturday with a different card.
it would be quite awkward. But
curious to see how they did on Friday versus how they do on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah, just entering a couple of games behind. But I'm excited about this book. This book is interesting, and I've been through it once now, and I've got a bit of a feel for how it works. This feels a lot like the 8th edition Jinx Steel Occult book to me. I mean, without the shooting, of course, but it does still have some pretty good shooting. But this is a really, really crazy book. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I like the feel of it, of how some things have been altered from the previous version, but almost like built into the data slates themselves. And so you have to, you know, piece together things a little bit less. It's just kind of right there for you to really do. Like, we talked about with the Slaanesh stuff getting much faster than maybe it used to be. So you don't have to necessarily worry about the kind of a tricky rule or whatever. And on the show coming up, we have you may know as Nurgle Snurgle on the internet.
Yeah.
First place demon player ranked in the ITC in Canada. I think she's awesome. Like 11th or 14th in the world. And we also have Scott LaFountain, who you may have seen some coverage from. I think like second place at SoCal Open this past year.
Yeah. Yep. I can't remember if he was playing Monster Mash there, but I remember him always playing a Monster Mash Demon Army, Bellicor, Bunch of Keepers of Secrets.
Yeah, we talk a bit about that with Scott. And then also, you know, bring up some things you can do. You know, I don't want to steal any thunder from these segments. So actually, let's go ahead and take a quick break and come back in with Tanya and I talking with Nurgle Snurgle. And then it'll be you and I come back before we go to that next segment. Hang out for a couple seconds, about 15 minutes with the community spotlight, and then come back for me and Adam.
Dova. N-O-V-A Nova. Wish us gonna Nova.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special community spotlight segment. Here we're going to be talking a lot about Nurgle demons, and we're joined by this very special guest, Nurgle Snurgle. You may know her as Kaylee Ellischuk. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we got Tanya Gates here as well.
Hey, everybody.
People may know you on Instagram and the other social medias. But if they aren't aware, you've actually been playing in tournaments and like number one demons in Canada, like 14th, 13th, and who knows by the time people hear this in the world for demons?
Yes. Yes. I keep track of the internet ITC points.
People need to be keeping track of your ITC points.
I'm actually quite surprised. There's a few of us demon players, but I'm keeping up on top, so I'm enjoying it a little bit.
Demons, they've you know, it's been a while since they've gotten an update, and now, right now, the new codex is up for pre-order. I guess by the time maybe people hear this, it's actually able to order. Have you had a chance to kind of look at some of the previews and some of the other content out there?
I have. I read the Goonhammer article that's out there, mostly just the demon stuff in that article. And then I've been putting on the Art of War video, their 4-hour video review of the Chaos Demons in the background for a little bit, and really been focusing on learning the demons. I'm actually having a game this Sunday. It's probably going to be already streamed by the time this is out. But so I'm having to learn these Nurgle demons quite rapidly.
I think they got a little bit of an upgrade, at least on the like things like Beast of Nurgle. And what do you think of the Great Unclean ones?
I love that the amount of wounds that they're getting. That's quite the upgrade from 18 to 22. And Rodicus has 24. The Tough 9 is very spicy. I like seeing that. The relics are pretty cool. The warlord traits are pretty nice. I think they're still viable in Nurgle Demons.
Is there anything like you're really excited about playing?
So this is a big shift from what I was playing. I was playing big hordes of plague bears and nurglings, and they've kind of mid-sized them a little bit. The sloppy bio.
That's gracious, by the way, to saying to mid-size them. It's a
yes. The sloppy bile paper looks kind of good to bring along. I like the idea that you can shut off obsec with Nurgle demons. You can stop actions with Nurgle demons. So it's going to be a different play style I'm going to have to adjust to.
So do you think that you're going to just stick with just Nurgle going forward? Are you going to mix in the different god types? Do you have any plans going forward?
Obviously, the first plan I'm going to go with is check out Nurgle demons, just kind of play around with them and see the different options that I have. Bellicor looks very nice. I think the Disciples of Bellicor will probably be my next army that I kind of dabble with the Chaos Demons.
Such a gorgeous model too. You can't really go wrong with Bellicor just on your shelf in your collection.
I do have access to all Chaos Demons, so I'll be playtesting quite a bit when the book comes out.
I mean, you mentioned the kind of horde stuff. Were you also like leaning into the psychic powers? Like, what's been working for you up until this point, and how do you anticipate it changing as far as like tactics and secondaries and that kind of stuff goes?
So lately, I've been playing two Great Unclean ones with Virulent Blessings, and which does the +1 to wound, and six is doing double damage. And I was playing with Miasma, which was -1 to hit. Now that Virulent Blessings is a little bit different, it's adding +1 damage. It does -1 damage. I believe you have the book.
It does. Yes. Yeah. So it's like a friendly legion, demonic and Nurgle core unit within 18 inches, invisible to the psyker until the start of your next psychic phase. Add 1 to the damage characteristic of melee weapons.
Yes.
In that unit that are equipped with.
So that's completely different from +1 wound and 6 is being double damage. As for spells, I think Nurgle's Rot and the Shivering Pox is a very nice combo to play with. Shivering Pox doing -1 toughness, pretty much the same. And Nurgle's Rot just spilling out mortal wounds within 6 inches of a model.
You gotta like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually a lot more options to do mortal wounds, which is nice to see, especially from the Beast of Nurgle, like you mentioned. Doing 2 mortals on 6s is very, very tempting.
Did you have like some of these? You said you mentioned it, you had access to a lot of demons. Did you have a pretty healthy, you know, I want to say bouquet of Nurgle demons in the garden? See what I did there?
Oh, so many. I can't tell you how many times people were in my DMs or even people I know in real life ask me, how many bees do you have? Do you have bees? And the answer is yes, 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 yes.
So you're well prepared.
I played a list with them one time with 18 of them. So I have enough bees to share with my friends.
one of the reasons that they're so attractive now is because they automatically heal if you don't do enough damage to them. And they've got a healthy amount of both like toughness and wounds. Do you think that that is going to live up to the hype?
Yes. At first, I think people were really scared of them when rumors were about with Nurgle Demons getting the minus one damage or spells to do feel no pain. So I don't think they're as scary as they rumored to be, but I think they're going to be great Overwatch soakers. You know, you deep strike them next to Rodicus within 6 inches. They charge, they take up all of those wounds, and they heal back up at the end of the phase.
Rodicus, that's the second time we mentioned Rodicus. And
yeah,
I mean, that character, you know, hasn't been on the table in a while. Do you think the rules are kind of lending themselves to now it's more of an optimal choice?
Oh, for sure. I think out of the greater demon or the great unclean ones, I think people are going to play with them. The ability to do mortal wounds on a cast of a 7, and that's to the closest enemy unit. So you don't even have to be visible. Someone could be hiding and you'd be like, ah, I got you with a mortal wound, is very nice. And him being tough 9, 24 wounds, it's going to be tough to bring Rodicus down.
With a 4+ demonic save.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about the impact of what a demonic save is in a second. The rule you were just referencing is a deluge of Nurgle. And each time the model successfully manifests a psychic power, the result of the psychic test was 7 or better. After resolving the psychic power, the closest enemy unit within 24 suffers D3 mortal wounds. You're right. No line of sight mentioned there. Just closest enemy unit. 24 inches is big, especially on the base of that model, which is, what, the 100mm round or something like that?
Yes.
I'm glad you said that, by the way, about Rodicus, because I have a painted Rodicus, and it was one of the first things I looked at when the book dropped. Was like, is Rodicus good? And I do think he's a good choice.
Mm-hmm. And him getting Warp Locus, I think, is another reason why he's so attractive.
What's that do?
That is when you deep strike, because now demons can deep strike for free, which is, I think, is a really cool ability. And Warp Locus gives the ability to deep strike wholly within 6 inches of that model, and you can be 6 inches away from any enemy models.
Very strong.
Pairing that up with some, maybe a couple feculent Gnarl Maws on the table, you're going to be able to deep strike pretty much anywhere on the table.
So much like the Beast of Nurgle, are you also prepared with feculent Gnarl Maws?
I have 2. I may think of getting a couple more.
But that is one of the benefits of being, you know, what we might consider a faction specialist, is that, you know, when you're doing your hobby time, if you know, after you get done with your 2,000 points and you still want to explore the faction, you find yourself pretty well insulated against changes.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is my first change or addition change with data sheets and stuff. And I was actually pretty happy with not having to rush to the GW store to make sure I can get some decent Nurgle or some models. I'm well prepared.
In the past, Nurgle has kind of been heralded as not being incredibly fast, and that's kind of been a detriment. And, you know, movement wins games of Warhammer 40,000.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been winning in spite of that? Well, in spite of Nurgle's characteristics of movement?
Well, the list that I built with the great and clean ones came with sloppy biopipers, and the sloppy biopipers allowed the great and clean ones to advance and charge. So that kind of helped them get through the table. And I played around with the secondaries, Reality Rebels and the Despoilers of Reality, and we had summoning back then. So that's how I kind of played to the army and kept up with points. I wasn't getting like the max 100s, but I was getting high 80s and 90s with the list.
Yeah, win is a win. I mean, that's really, I guess in battle point tournaments where that's the only thing that matters, of course you want to try to get as much as you can, but, you know, being able to kind of put a lock on the game and prevent your opponent from scoring points, you know, you don't have to go for hundreds.
Oh yeah. Like, my whole game plan then was, as long as I hold primaries for 3.5 turns, that's all I need to do. And I would take Warp Ritual. So as long as I have good first 3 turns, I was golden.
Nice. The warp storm is a pretty big difference in this book as well. Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to kind of look at that, you know, the Undivided and the Nurgle powers, or any of the other powers, really? Anything catching your eye?
Yes. The extra AP is kind of nice. Nurgle suffered really hard in 8th edition with the lack of AP. There's nothing worse than putting a big block of 9 beasts and having no AP and your opponent just saving everything because they have a 2 up. You were hoping for those mortal wounds, but the extra AP Warp Storm is kind of nice. The -1 to hit is very, very pleasant. The -1 leaderships is kind of nice because that's going to help with the deep striking as well, because there's a lot to the deep striking rule, especially when you can deep strike in no man's land equal or greater than the leadership or something about that. So I think Slaanesh and Knights is going to be talked about quite a bit, especially with Night Lords, so that you can really hammer on the leadership.
Somebody's leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that much. I'm of course, you know, exaggerating, but a bunch.
You're probably not far off with, like, especially with the Chaos Knights, when they can do like -4 leadership or something like that, and you're just stacking with these warp storms and more shenanigans from Slaanesh. So I think that's going to be a really great build. As for Nurgle, you're probably not going to see them with Chaos Knights or much souped with many, maybe. I'm not too sure.
That's a good call. It is going to seem probably a little bit points hungry once you start looking at all the stuff that you want to take with Nurgle, as opposed to just utility stuff you might want to take with the other gods.
Mm-hmm. I think you're going to just see mono Nurgle or a little bit of with Bellicor.
People get used to seeing them out there. Bellicor and Abaddon are going to be in lots of lists.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a knight. I've actually seen some, like, the war dogs mixed in with Nurgle Plague Marines, not with demons yet, but maybe that's something to help supplement, like, the long range element in a Nurgle army.
Yeah, I think especially with that new, you can have 25% of your army or of, like, the power level. So that's going to be a little bit more bookkeeping to kind of figure out. But yeah, 25% of your army can be demons. So you're going to see a lot of just playtesting and trying to unlocking different combos. So that's a lot of fun for Chaos players in as a total.
That is, you know, we talked about in the last show, was that they become the agents of Chaos if it's 25% or less of your mm-hmm. of your army. This, I think, is going to get people excited, but there's been already talks of things like the list is going to have difficulty finding its identity because it doesn't have some of those mm-hmm. built-in factions, you know, or unit names or cults or what have you. Is that something that you've thought about or even matter to you, or is kind of the attraction been to the Pantheon itself?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to say that I was, like, underwhelmed, maybe more shocked that, like, a lot of abilities are gone, or there isn't, like, a fluff to, say, like, the mono god. But I'm not going to rule anything out. I'm going to still... that means that I have that much of a challenge to find the combo. Because I like to believe that anything works. Like, obviously, Nurgle demons in 8th, even going into 9th, were always deemed as not playable, not meta, not competitive. And I always took that as a challenge of, like, well, I'm going to find something. I'm going to find something that's going to make them work. And I think that just adds to the fun of this book.
So what about Nurgle calls you?
I get asked this a lot, but I think it is the typical, they are very cute. I've told this story to Tanya before, but
I was going to say, it's the sassy Nurgling, right?
I gotta love him. I always thought that Warhammer was just Space Marines and orcs and guns and power armor. And when I saw these fleshy little Nurglings, I thought they were the most adorable things. And they gave me such inspiration to paint. And I got into them. And then I started playing with the army. And time again, my opponents would always tell me, like, that was a great game. Like, I can't believe how, like, resilient you are. Or, like, I would lose a lot, but they still had a fun time. And that's what Nurgle was. It was just fun.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's, can't argue with that answer.
No.
Well, hopefully we can have you on again in the future to talk about maybe the list as you've got the book in your hands and you've played with it and you've got to, you know, do, mix and match and do a little testing. You mentioned you are going into a game in the upcoming weekend, probably the day after people hear this. What are you going to be playing against? Do you know yet?
I'm playing against Tau, so I'm kind of hoping he brings some Hammerhead so I can just say, ah, I still get to save.
That is that. Oh, that's right. We mentioned we're going to talk about that. The demonic save, you know, is is its own thing. Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty cool.
Yep. Cannot be modified or and it cannot be ignored, which is very, very nice.
Well, seriously, thanks a lot for coming on and sharing, you know, some of your experiences the way it was, what got you, you know, excited about this new codex. And then again, hopefully we can talk to you sometime in the future and see how it's going as you've explored the book more.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I love talking Nurgle Demons. So anytime.
Where can people find you? Because you paint and play and do all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's...
Oh, you can find me kind of like all over. You can mainly find me on Instagram. I like to put some stories and I do paint there. I do live battle reports every Sunday at Wrathreach. So you can follow us at Twitch at Wrathreach Tabletop Gaming. And if I'm playing or not, you can just come and hang out with us.
It's always a really fun time, actually. I love catching your guys' live streams.
I've learned so much by doing the streams. So yes, it's fun.
Okay, well, I will try to throw those links in the show notes, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
We are back. I don't know if I have enough bumpers to put in the show for all the segments that we have this time. So if you hear the same one twice, you know, just go to Discount Games and our sponsor twice.
Fair.
But so one of the things, you know, that we talked about is that you know, with the everything gets deep strike.
Yeah, Army Wide Deep Strike, which is a rule they had kind of always up until 8th edition. Yeah, I feel like it was Army Wide Deep Strike up until 8th edition, and then you had to pay some stuff could start in reserve, I think. Maybe it was a 8th edition they had Deep Strike as well, but they just had the restriction of the 50% had to be on the board.
Yeah. And now, you know, with this kind of stuff, you know, one of the things we kind of chatted about is that Rodigus and the Great Unclean Ones, you know, toughness 9 now with just a truckload of wounds, you know, 22 and 24 respectively, depending on which one you take.
Yeah.
You know, coming down turn 3 with that.
Legit, I'm imagining like G-Dub looking at how big they made the Greater Daemons and being like, well, we can't make them 9 wounds because they're gigantic. So we should probably make them like 20. And that's what they did. They made them all like around 20 wounds. You know, even a Bloodthirster has got toughness 8 now. And then, of course, the Grand Clean one going to toughness 9. That's so crazy. Your multi-melter's wounding on 5s. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah. And then, you know, just think about it. You know, I think there's going to be some cool combos that people will figure out and unleash. And I don't want to claim to have the best answer right now.
I've got one for you to unpack. So this is the one I want everybody to be ready for, because this seems like it's the crazy one that might catch people out. Have we unpacked how the locuses work? How the deep strike and a little bit closer?
No, we have not yet.
Do you want to unpack it?
Go for it. As far as like this with the manifestation rules that we were talking about. So during deployment, you can set this unit up in the warp instead of setting up on the battlefield. If you do so, then in the reinforcement step of your movement phase, you can set up this unit anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models, or more than 6 inches away from any models, and wholly within 6 inches of a friendly warp locus model. Now, that was on the battlefield at the start of the turn.
They've done a really good job of making the warp locus kind of not easy to come by. It's pretty much all the named greater demons. as in it is your Skybrand, it is your Bellicor, it is your Fateweaver. Shalaxy and Rodigus all have it. In addition, I think there's a way to give it, I think it might be a Wall of Trade or a Relic to give it to, or an Exalted ability to give it to a Tzeentch Greater Demon, a Lord of Change. But outside demons, that's the only places you're going to get this ability, to get a 6-inch Deep Strike from reserve. So you have to roll a 6 on 2 dice instead of a 9. Yeah,
or 3 dice if you're using Bloodletters. And that's one of the things that Scarlet Fountain talks about later on too, is, that's a thing you can do now.
You can just do that now. It's pretty nuts. But there is the caveat in there, where it says that model, that Warp Locus, has to be on the table at the start of the turn. So can't have arrived from reserve that turn. And so you can't, of course, the joke is then, if that line wasn't there, I could just Deep Strike Scarbrand, then Deep Strike 30 Bloodletters within 6 of Scarbrand. I've got, I go from having no board presence to overwhelming board presence immediately. So that caveat means, kind of stops that. There is one workaround, which, please, this isn't watertight just yet. This is just a combo that I'll be talking about with some players. We haven't picked it over ad nauseum to see if it's 100% watertight, but Bellicor has this ability. Bellicor has the Warp Locus ability, and Bellicor has every mark. He has every single mark of every one of the gods. And of course, to use the Warp Locus ability of that god, you have to have the same mark as that god. So only Bellicor will allow any god's units to do the Warp Locus Deep Strike off him. Apart from that, you have to go to Chaos Space Marines to get it. But because of that, Bellicor is the activator for having a multi-god army. He's the one that makes the multi-god army work, which it makes a lot of sense, fluff and awesomeness-wise. But here's the trick, There is a stratagem for Tzeentch demons that is essentially a gate or a what's it called for orcs?
The jump
for orcs. It's essentially, it's a 2CP shunt where you pick up the model and you put it down 9 inches away. Now the rule, we might have to wait and see, get some TO clarification to see if that counts as arriving from reserve, because the wording of the rule for the Warp Locus says it has to have been on the table at the start of the turn. Well, Bellicor was on the table at the start of the turn.
I don't think there's any ambiguity there. It is.
Yeah.
So let me read what you're talking about is the Warp Portal. Use this stratagem in your movement phase when you select the Legion Demonica Tzeentch character model from your army to make a normal move. Instead of moving it as normal, remove that unit from the battlefield and set it up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models.
There's your activator. There's your same turn. I went from being nowhere near you to, oh my God, they're all up in my face and making 6-inch charges. So that's the one I wanted to tell people about, because that's the one you need to be aware of. You need to be on the money, because Bellicor can go from being on the back of the board edge to being right up in your grill and enabling a bunch of demons to get 6-inch charges on you. So there's Adam's hot tip. If you see Bellicor and a bunch of lesser demons in reserve, make sure you're double and triple screening the stuff you don't want to get charged.
Yeah, the Warp Locus goes on. It's like the gift that keeps on giving. So yes, if the Warp Locus model has an allegiance key, see left, it can only be set up with has the same allegiance, which you covered that. If every unit from your army has the Legion Demonica keyword, then the reinforcement step of one of your movement phases, you can instead set this model up anywhere on the battlefield with the following restrictions. And if it's in your deployment zone, so wholly within your deployment zone and more than 3 inches away from enemy models. So you can come in. If it's in your deployment zone, you can come down 3 inches away from your opponents.
The prospects of getting aggressive on a demon army and like trying to take away their home objective and stuff is really, really troubling to try and get aggressive on these armies, which is thematic. I mean, it's pretty cool. You're getting into their deployment zone. You're getting closer to the affluence, the effects of the warp.
The breach of the Eye of Terror, where they've already established some dominance.
Exactly right. They're stronger there, so they're going to be easier to come and get you. I do like the arriving from reserve and having decent charges. That's where I got the comparison to the 8th edition Gene Stealer Cult book, where it was just like there was no army. You were playing against Gene Stealer Cult, and they just weren't there. And then, oh my God, they're everywhere. Yeah. That's how demons kind of feel.
And there's another bullet point here. So neither wholly within your deployment zone nor within your opponent's deployment zone, and more than a number of inches from each enemy unit equal to the current leadership characteristics of that enemy unit to a minimum of 3 inches and a maximum of 9. And that's very important wording there. The current leadership of the unit, meaning if they're under some leadership modifiers, let's say, from some knights, some renegade knights, or some other things in your army?
Or just themselves. Like, every demon gives out an aura of -1 leadership, don't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah. Well, while they're within 6 inches of that unit, which is relevant, because you can have something on the table that's there. But, you know, it's just the important thing there is the current leadership value.
Yeah, not unmodified, highest or lowest. It's just whatever they are right then, right there. Which is big, man. It's big. You're going to have a lot more. So it's weird. Yeah, this is a part of the ninth edition kind of lexicon of factions, archetypes that we haven't quite seen. Like, I've stopped taking my infiltrators. I've stopped taking a unit in my army that does Auspex scan. You know, in 8th edition, every one of my Space Marine armies was built to have one of those options. All my Guard armies was built to have multiple triple redundancy of screens because there was so much charging from reserve. I mean, big bloodletter bombs was certainly one of those factors in 8th edition. I'd play against guys who had double or triple 20 or 30 man bloodletter bombs, and they'd all be doing 3d6 plus 1 charges from reserve. And I would need to have double and triple redundancy, or have a way to shoot them when they arrive, or have a way to make them arrive further away. And those were things I just haven't had to worry about in 9th edition. So it's going to be really interesting to see how people adapt, because this is a whole new, I don't know, set of issues, set of questions that demons get to ask exclusively. I think the only other army that asks those same questions could be Sisters, with their miracle dice charges from reserve. Like, you know, Zephram come in and just got a 9 on your miracle dice. Ooh, looks like we're in. that kind of stuff. So only they, I think, do it the same, but they don't do it anywhere near as en masse as demons do. Demons could be half their army making.
I also think this influences, especially with the enter their deployment zone, it influences some secondaries that people may take.
100%. Yeah.
And if an army is used to saying, oh, well, I'm going to sacrifice units, or I'm going to be there and I'm going to score these points, and they can bank on like, ooh, their 12 points or 15 points now becomes a 9 or a 6 point, and they've got to rethink some of their choices, which is going to give the demon player an advantage.
Exactly right. I mean, banners just becomes a way harder pick, right? Banners just become so much harder to take on demons. Thinking like you can take a psychic secondary against them as well, like, you know, psychic ritual, where you, or warp ritual, whatever it is, where you get into the middle of the table. And then, oh, cool, you're into the middle of the table. Oh my God, I just got charged by 6 units from reserve because I tried to do my secondary in the middle of the table.
Or they did it with like a leadership 7 character, and now that becomes a leadership 5 character through a couple of little casual things. And then now it's almost impossible to fill a charge.
Exactly.
Not that I want to jinx any players out there. Still got to.
Yeah, it's going to cause a shakeup, man. It's going to cause a shakeup in how we play. I will say that there are some parts of this that don't make sense to me. Like, so I would have thought that you'd give an upgrade to make any god able to have a warp locus. Like, there was an upgrade for Khorne, for a relic wall or trait, something to give them, let them have a warp locus outside their special characters. But to give it to Tzeentch, the only one of the four gods that doesn't really want to be stuck in combat all the time, to give it to them, I thought was pretty interesting.
Well, think of this. I don't think that, I mean, just to reverse it, I don't think that they want to be stuck in combat. I think this is the way for them to dig themselves out of combat.
Oh, that's fair. If you want to look at it that way, that's actually not a bad call, mate. Because yeah, like in combat, they have really bad saves. They struggle a lot. I mean, for instance, their best melee unit is a Screamer, and offensively, a Screamer's actually got a pretty good profile. They've got, I think it's 3 attacks each at strength 6 minus 2 or 3, 2 damage. But they hit on 4s, you know, so be it. It's okay. Take a big enough unit, you'll still get through. But they have a 6 up save in combat, so they'll just die. They'll die very quickly unless they kill what they can on charge, unless like they deep strike, charge, and wipe the unit out. They're like, even just like one intercessor sergeant could cause you some real problems. And so you're right, that's fair. If you get stuck into combat, you know, someone tri-points a unit of horrors or something, you're going to need to sweep through that and get out of that problem. So
it has warp it like in the that, title too. Like, who's good at warp? Tzeentch is good at warp. Let's just sprinkle someone
slap it in there. Yeah, it's also this codex doesn't feel like one ubiquitous demon codex. Like, there aren't any generic stratagems, warlord traits, relics. It seems like 4 small codexes wearing a trench coat.
See, okay, that is something to unpack a bit, because some of the criticism that I've seen, you know, even on our post on Facebook where we, you know, for the show last week, and then some other folks giving their commentary on the book itself, is that they believe that there's the codex is, and I even asked this of of our guest in the previous segment is they feel like our guest, you hear the answer, but some other folks out there felt like there might be a little bit of identity missing from the Codex because it didn't have those banner factions. And I want to argue that the factions are already their banner factions. Like Nurgle is a creature, is a personality. It's not just a random name in the Codex. It's a living, breathing thing in the Warhammer 40,000 universe.
And I have heard similar criticisms of that. This book is a little bit too sandboxed until I figured out one particular thing. Please forgive me if I'm wrong on this call, but I'm talking to Demon players. They've figured out over time, and some of them had the same knee-jerk reactions of like, oh, where's my generic XYZs, or, you know, where's my generic relics, or just good stuff that I can just take regardless of which god, you know? And they were a bit lamenting that fact. But then it was realized that to unlock the stratagems for each god, you just had to have the keyword. You didn't need to have a detachment. Didn't need to have a mono detachment. Yep. Didn't have have nothing. If you have a battalion and just have
if your army includes any Legions Demonica X units,
you get
in, excluding those in the auxiliary support, super heavy auxiliary or fortification network detachment, you have access to these stratagems and can spend CP on them.
Exactly. So you could have a battalion with all four gods in it, and your army has access to every single one of those stratagems in the entire book. So it's not like it's not deep in that way. It's not malleable. They've just put some faction restrictions upon it to say like, well, we've built these for purpose. We've built all these stratagems for specific units in the book or specific gods. And we think, well, there's very – like, I mean, the only way they'd have – on those terms, upon the metrics they built this book on, the only stratagems they should have in there is a strat for soul grinders, a strat for furies, a strat for generic demon princes, because they're the only undivided options in here. And everything else is dedicated to a god.
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess I don't want to discount those opinions out there, but I think it's, they should, well, if they're coming from a place of that the Codex is just not as deep as they want it to be. And I can respect that because that's an opinion and that's subjective. You know what I mean? But I think as far as like finding an identity, I don't want to say it's easier to find, but maybe that's because I'm coming at it from such a long time, you know, someone who's aware of Chaos and the Chaos Demons and the Chaos Pantheon. Maybe for newer players, it's something that they haven't been exposed to or just have in their core memories.
I could, for people who just joined the game in 8th edition, I could see this Codex as being a little jarring because it is so different to others. Like I said, it really feels like four supplements wearing a hat rather than like one cohesive book. But the fact is, I think they've made it so easy to make this book work together that I'm here for it. And there are some really good data sheets in here. Flamers. Can I just pontificate on flamers for a moment?
Please.
Go buy some. That's it. That's all. Move on. No, that's this way. They are the bees. I think they are one of the bee's knees of this book. You can give them +1 to wound from a psychic power. I think you can get them up to strength 6 with +1 to wound. And then they have D6 +3 shots each. And then if you are shooting into like 11 or more models, there's a stratagem to give them blast. So they'll just be 9 shots a pop. They have a 3+ invulnerable save, or demonic invulnerable save, so they're very hard to remove from range as long as you don't let them get charged by stuff, you know, too easily. Keep them screened, keep them safe. Beast of Nurgle being my optimum pick to get in between them and aggressive units. They will shoot, and they are actually quite strong. They're strength 5, -2, 1 damage base. I wish there was a way to give them ignores cover. I haven't found a way to. There may be one that I just haven't seen yet.
The Exalted Flamer can get up strength 6 on their pink fire. So there's...
Yeah. And then they've also got 3 shots that are damage 3 as well with high strength, rend 4, I think. So strength 9, rend 4, 3 damage.
That is strength... Yeah, 9. Yeah, it's like basically like shooting last cannons from the Exalteds.
Which are assault. Yeah, it's assault. So you can advance around with that thing and do that everywhere.
Assault, no joke.
Yeah, no joke at all. I feel like G-Dub's gone out of their way to try and make the chariots good as well. Just putting it out there. I'm not sure they are, guys, but I can see G-Dub's trying.
No, they feel good. Scott, in the next segment, brings up a Khorne unit. Actually, why don't we just... Let's take a break. Let's hear from an expert, and then we'll come back on that.
Beautiful. Is it the Skull Cannon?
He does not mention the Skull Cannon. No.
Boo, Scott, boo. Nah,
sorry. I don't know. He makes a pretty good argument for this. But anyway, we'll let him do that. So in just a second, come back with myself and Scott, and then we'll be back with me and Adam. See you in a minute.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/forgethenarrative.
This is a community spotlight packed episode. I'm Paul, and I got Scott LaFountain. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, long-time listener, I know, but you know, you've been actually tearing it up this whole last year with Old Demons, and like one of the top finishers at some of the largest tournaments in the country, and wanted to have you on to talk about the new codex that people have in their hands. This is the faction that people love. Want to know what you're thinking about with them.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, this is an interesting codex. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on in here. I mean, stuff from like the Warp Locust to our Deep Strike shenanigans that we're getting, the Malefic weapons with extra attacks to our awesome demonic invulnerability. There's a lot to talk about in this book.
Do you have a specific faction that's jumping out at you that you're kind of anxious to get a list on the table with?
You know, I really like Tzeentch, but they're not quite as durable. So I think I'm leaning more towards Khorne just because some of the stuff that they can do with the Warp Storm.
Oh, really? So durable and Khorne is not something you hear often. What has got your interest there?
Yeah. So one of the things I looked at when I build a list is I like having fairly durable units, and looking at stuff like Scarbrand and Bloodthirsters, having a 4-up save in both melee and shooting is really pretty good, where stuff like the Tzeentch, they kind of have to stay back. They don't want to get in combat. They've only got a 6-up save in combat, but a 3-up to shooting. So yeah, kind of getting in there and tussling. And I like playing a really aggressive army, so Khorne works really well for that.
So even with the smaller unit sizes, you think that's they're still going to have enough choppy power?
Oh, yeah. Especially with us getting all the instruments and the banners for free on any of our units that can take them is amazing. Taking a big unit of Blood Crushers and deep striking them in with Warp Locusts, so they're coming in outside of 6. And if you really want to guarantee you make that charge, spend 1 CP for Banner of Blood because they have a banner. And all of a sudden now you're rolling 3 dice, discarding the lowest for a 6-inch charge.
So the Warp Locust, we actually talked about that in the last Community Spotlight segment, is that it's a new ability in this codex that allows you to come down within a certain distance of a Warp Locust model, which can bring you with it or stay out of 6 inches instead of 9 inches.
Yeah, and it gets really interesting too when you look at someone like Bellicor who has the Warp Locust ability, and you can spend a 2 CP strat for him to teleport across the board outside of 9 inches, and then all of a sudden bring in anything you want that's in Deep Strike, because everything can Deep Strike in our book now. Like, that's pretty spicy.
With no extra cost, right?
So. Yeah, no extra cost. And all of a sudden, Bellicor jumps across the board outside 9 inches, and you have a Bloodthirster and Scarbrand dropping in with them, and they're outside 6.
That does sound pretty good.
That sounds really scary.
That's a lot of points, though. You think it's got what it takes. Is that just a gimmick?
Yeah. No, I don't think it's a lot of points. I think in this list with demons, you almost have to bring Bellicor. He's like a mainstay. So one of the weird list building mechanics with our book is if your detachment is a pure demon detachment, so pure Khorne, pure Nurgle, pure Tzeentch, whatever it is, that unlocks the Warp Locust for you. But the way it's worded, Bellicor going as Supreme Command Attachment, he unlocks all of them for you no matter what. Because it just says that the detachment has to have, all of their units have to have the Tzeentch keyword, or all of them have to have the Tzeentch keyword to unlock those Warp Locust abilities. Or not Warp Locust, the Warp Storm. And so now we have access to everything just by bringing Bellicor to Supreme Command. Everything else can be undivided and mixed, but he unlocks that kind of key special part for us. So Bellicor is absolutely worth the points.
Oh, but I'm talking about, like, you think that the Bloodthirsters, you know, with that combo, do you think that might be something you might actually try?
Well, I mean, Scarbrand hits harder than Bellicor. He's getting 3 additional attacks, still hitting on 2s. He's still ignoring invulns. He's going up to strength 16 instead of strength 12. He's not quite as durable when it comes to the minuses to hit and stuff, but at 320 points or 330 points, yeah, he's a beast to run around the board, especially when you just put him in deep strike and drop him in where you need him. The Bloodthirster, same thing. I mean, the 4-up save for both shooting and melee, and then you can give him the exalted trait for only being able to take 8 wounds a phase, and you're pretty much guaranteeing that he's living 1 or 2 turns. And then the flail that he has. Have you heard about the flail on this guy, Paul?
I have. Hit us. What does it do?
Oh, so it's a single shot, hitting on 2s, strength 16, minus 5 AP, 3d3 damage, and the extra damage carries over from model to model.
So a unit, you could plug it into a unit.
Yeah, you hit it into a unit of guardsmen, and you're just picking up 3d3 guardsmen. You know, it's amazing for what it is.
There you go. So maybe not just a gimmick.
no, I think a Bloodthirster is going to have a lot of play. And then you start looking at the stuff they can get from the Warp Storm. So they have the Overwhelming Rage for four Warp Storm points. And then units can't fall back from any Khorne model on your board or on the table on a 4-up.
Yeah, on a 4+. Yeah, that's army-wide.
Yeah, army-wide. Every Khorne model in your army, including Bellicor, they just can't fall back from on a 4-up.
Yeah,
like that's I like just go in and tag as much stuff as you can.
And you think that's ultimately doable with things like the Banner of Blood and then maybe a little Warp Locust.
Yeah, Banner of Blood, Warp Locust. Yeah, absolutely. You're going in tagging as much as you can. And then the other stuff, like the Deep Strike shenanigan that we have, where we can Deep Strike in our own deployment zone outside of 3 inches of enemy models, that's a great counter charge right there. And if we're Deep Striking in no man's land, we can Deep Strike in outside of our enemy's leadership. So if their leadership's 5, we're coming in outside of 5 inches. We can't go more than 9, and we can't go less than 3. So we can come in a lot of places on the board at one time. And so, yeah, I think having the Khorne just piling in and then tagging stuff and then not allowing stuff to fall back, it makes us really, really tough to chew through.
That is. It seems like they've kind of broken out of their like what you might consider normal abilities for Khorne. They've kind of let them cross over into some of the other realms a little bit, which is made them a little bit more interesting, if you ask me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that one of the sleeper units that a lot of people are going to not pick up on right away is probably going to end up being the Rend Master, which is the new Herald on Chariot. I think he's going to be really, really good for his points, sitting at 9 wounds. He gets a bunch of extra attacks from the Chariot, the Malefic attacks. And he's giving out the reroll ones, moving pretty fast. I think he's going to be really good. And another sleeper unit is going to be the Keeper of Slaanesh. They're one of the best pointed models.
I think people got their eye on the model.
I think the model's amazing. But when you start looking at stuff that the Lord of Change can do with the smites, and you look at, you know, the Great Unclean One with the corruption relic, just auto wounding when you get a hit, and the Bloodthirster being as tough as he is, the Keeper doesn't look as good, but sitting at 280 points with the shield gives it a 4+ in melee, 4+ in combat, and it's only 280 points still at that point. It's pointed out the best for all of the greater demons for the number of wounds and the saves it has.
Oh, that's good. And you mentioned, you know, like the demonic save is, you know, not an armor save, not an invulnerable save. It's something completely different.
Yep. And you just can't modify it. That's just what we have. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Malefic rule?
So the Malefic rule is really cool. I noticed when I was reading on the internet, there's a little bit of debate going on today about there's a wording in there about you can't, it doesn't matter what the ability is or whatever, it can't modify the Malefic weapons. And there's some debate on whether stuff like Armor of Contempt can modify the AP from it. I'm not going to go into all that because I'm not exactly sure what the ruling is going to be on that. It's a little crazy. But I love the idea of, you know, a Keeper having these Malefic attacks. And it's 4 Malefic attacks from the claws. And it's just they get that no matter what. There's no way of getting past it. You can't stop it. They always have those attacks. They don't degrade. It's just there. And I think that's great.
Yeah. I like how they've blended in some, you know, some cool rules while keeping that kind of flavor of the demonicness or something other than a worldly creature, something you would find in this realm.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of stuff that is very flavorful in this book. I think my biggest gripe and disappointment about it, though, is we only get one warlord trait. There's no way for us to get a second warlord trait. And that's a little disappointing.
There's different ones to choose from, but you mean there's no way to assign another warlord trait?
Yeah, we get one and that's it.
Is there like a combo you wish you could have access to, or is it just kind of lamenting the fact that...
The combo I really like is, again, going back to the Bloodthirster, giving him the relic that gives him the same swing like the big axe does on the unfettered Bloodthirster. So he has basically the big axe, but it's a small version. And then he has the flail that does that 3d3 damage that carries over. And then you give him the exalted ability where he only takes 8 wounds, and then give him a warlord trait where he has a 5+ feel no pain.
The exalted ability, if people, you know, didn't catch it in the last show, it's something you pay points for. It's an upgrade that you pay actual points out of your army list for.
Yeah, I'm glad they removed the CP cost on that, because that helps quite a bit.
Yeah, command points, it's a different kind of world, but do you feel that the Warp Storm supplements that?
Yeah, I think the Warp Storm's interesting. I think the problem is going to be there's going to be those times where you roll those eight dice and you either roll really hot or you roll really bad, and it's either going to feel great or feel really disappointing.
Like, just be more aligned with chaos. Just be...
Yeah, just pray to those dark gods and hope you roll average and get your 4 or 5 every turn, be happy with it.
Yeah, the chaos gods can giveth and taketh away.
Many, many times. Oh, yeah. I felt that with the invulnerable saves in the old edition.
Yeah, there's some warp storm effects that you're looking to get every turn.
Yeah, like I know for me, if I'm going second, using the one where it's -1 to hit outside of 12 inches from descending shadows for 3, I would use that hands down every turn 1 when I'm going second for 3 warp storm points. Just your shooty army, cool. You're not going to touch me as well.
There are, I think it's early days, of course, but are you looking, I guess I can tell you're looking forward to getting this book in your hand. Is there a list you think you're going to build first? Like, what are some units you think you just have to go on a list right now for anybody to start their chaos journey with, or to, get off on the best leg with this new
codex? There's so many good ones. That's the problem with it. There's just so many. I mean, going from the Blood Crushers of Khorne to the Flamers of Tzeentch, Plague Bearers. There's so many units I want to get on the board. And with the point hikes, it's been very difficult looking at trying to build a list. For me, the list I'm looking at building is kind of resembling that old SoCal list I had. Just going Monster Mash, going very light on troops, 2 units of troops, 4 Greater Demons, and Bellicor.
Well,
that's the whole list.
Yeah, I don't.
No, I love that. I love that idea.
Do you think it's got, what's different now about that list then?
Different then, stuff like, the Beasts of Nurgle going up to 70, 80 points, that hurts that list quite a bit. But just...
survivability of the demons themselves.
Survivability? I think so. Here's my problem. Back with demons, back at SoCal, everything was great. That's why I did really well with them. That and the player placed terrain. But shortly after that, we started getting more and more stuff that could ignore invuln saves, like the Tau Hammerheads. And it just became where your big models couldn't live on the board. And so it was actually around that point where I stopped playing demons for a few months and switched to Chaos Knights, because it gave me that aggressive army back that I wanted.
Yeah, and you think you can kind of relive some of that with these demonic saves, or is it just the quality of the individual models have maybe improved a little bit?
Well, I think getting the extra wounds and the demonic saves, yeah, I think I think that list is going to have some pretty strong legs. But I think there's also some play just not taking any greater demons and going with Disciples of Bellicor and just running a horde again. Now, granted, all your horde units are only going to be 10 model units, but still just putting some really good stuff out on the board. I think that's got play too.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Well, hopefully we can have you on again later to talk about maybe, your list and how it may be solidified. Or if you have a list you can share with me, I'll put it in the show notes for people to see. Maybe there'll be a couple lists down there. Again, I think it's kind of cool to listen to the faction experts, and if you are just jumping into this for the first time, maybe seeing what they're thinking to get off to the right start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott, thanks for taking the time and coming on the show. Been a pleasure having you, and looking forward to
seeing. Yeah, not a problem. And if people have thanks. And if people have questions about demons and want to reach out to me, they can find me on Facebook. I'm happy to talk questions on there. And if you want to follow me along on my journey with painting models, you can find me at on Instagram at Mini Fight Club.
Dude, man, have a great rest of your evening.
Thanks, Paul. You too.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
We are back, Adam and here with myself, Paul. You mentioned the chariots, and yeah, I can't disagree. It seems like the chariots have, I don't say they've been pushed, but they're takeable. They're good.
And I would say that is the opposite of what they've been since they were released. They've not been good or takeable.
A couple of years ago, I saw a 9 chariot Slaanesh army.
Was it good though?
I think it did pretty well. I mean, I don't think it was,
It was fast. Yeah. It went real speedy. My always problem is it's always been a really fine line between making them thematic and making them strong. The Slaanesh chariots in particular, they were super strong and they actually hit really hard, but then they just I took 1 unit of Hurricane Bolted whatevers and just cleared them all up. It never felt like they were worth the points. I think they've done a really good job at the moment. I've looked extensively at the Zinch Chariot and the Skull Cannon. I think I mentioned the Skull Cannon last week, and I think both of them are very takeable. I need to unpack the Slaaneshi Chariots a little bit more before I'm willing to put the this is takeable stamp of Adam on it. But yeah, so far I'm quite happy with what I said. And you were saying that Scott was pretty high on the, was it the Herald
or whatever it's called? So now? The Ren Taker or.
Seriously, they've just got metal terms on a spinning wheel, and they at GW and they spin the wheel, and it just stopped on Rend, and then they spinned another one, and it stopped on Taker, and they're like, okay, well this guy
Rend Master,
Rend Master.
There's a lot of Rends and Masters in the Korn section here.
They pull up some Scandinavian black metal, and then they read off all the song names and put it on the spinning wheel or a dartboard, and then they just Rend. Master, cool. On what? Blood Throne. Yeah. They've got another one specifically for Baneblade variants, by the way.
Yep.
And Power Space Tools. Yeah, and Space Wolves. Yeah, Space Wolves just has just Latin, ancient Norse words for puppy, dog, wolf, and they're just throwing darts at those.
There are, I mean, the standout units, I think, if, and maybe this is a criticism that folks can have, is if you're going playing Undivided, I think you basically have to have Bellicor. Not only because he does that, but also because he's just so great.
He's sick. He's really, really, really strong. I think if you're starting this army now, Bellicor is the first place you start. Unless you're like dedicated to a god, like you are Khorne. You want to manifest Khorne or Slaanesh or Nurgle, whatever. But I think if you're playing just multi-god, 100%, I think Bellicor is an incredible place to start. And I do want to point out that the Warpstorm table, with how it's, I think we talked about it last week, how it's god-specific. If you take Bellicor in a Supreme Command attachment, he unlocks all the god-specific Warpstorms.
I don't mind that.
So that is another little workaround there to get the max value of taking Bellicor if you do. But it just means if you're taking a battalion, you've got to take a couple of other choices to fill it out.
I mean, what's it going to be now with armies? Are we going to see like Abaddon, Bellicor, and a couple knights, and maybe some Seekers of Slaanesh or something to score points?
Well, I don't hate the idea of... what do you lose taking a Baton? You lose the god specific. You lose the Warpstorm table entirely for taking a Baton with demons, unless you take the, because the way did we unpack it last week? You can take 25% of your power level as demons.
We did mention it to get you that section of your army then becomes Agents of Chaos, and you that does not violate your special rules.
I think that's really strong. I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I think Chaos players can sit down, be it on the toilet or in bed or in the shower, and find the specific power level breakpoints that allows them to get the units that they want. And I feel like you're going to be able to do it. So that's really, really cool. And yeah, thematic as well. So you could see like Bellicor and Abaddon teaming up on the table somewhere.
There's a couple of different things here. It tells you, how you generate Warpstorm points. And then it goes on to say Warpstorm points can also be gained via other rules and abilities. No matter the source, you can only gain Warpstorm points from your such a rule if every unit from your army has the Legion's Demonica keyword.
Yeah.
So excluding models with the Agents of Chaos or an aligned keywords.
Mm. So that means like it's your mono faction bonus, right? If you take any allies.
But if Abaddon gets the Agent of Chaos or an aligned keyword, then he can slip his way in there.
Yeah, that's true.
But the reason I was reading that out is like the first part was you roll if everyone in your army is the Legion of Demonica outside of Agents of Chaos. But I was like, what if there's other abilities that give you Warpstorm points so you could generate them a sneaky way and then use them in your Night Lord's army or whatever? Seems like they thought of that.
It does. Yeah, it does. Not as many loopholes.
Yeah, which I don't mind. But then
I don't mind either.
Just kind of thinking about what are big good models like. What is Chaos good stuff going to look like, and what would be the standout units
for this book? Depending on how you want to build it, I love. I think Beasts of Nurgle are very strong. They are 80 points per model, so they're not cheap at all. And I think Flamers as well. Is it interesting that I feel like they've gone down a similar route with this book as I did with the Tyranid book? As in the Tyranid book was the first book in a while where the Horde Tyranids, the little bugs, didn't feel very pushed, didn't feel very strong compared to a lot of the medium bugs.
The middle ones,
I feel like Yeah, I feel like this is the same here. We've got a good incentive to take a lot of the medium demons and the bigger demons, which is pretty similar to what where Tyranids are at. You know, Tyranids, they want to take, you know, Hive Tyrants and Carnifexes and sometimes Exocrines or Maliceptors, Harpies, and then a bunch of medium bugs, a bunch of Warriors, Raveners, Pyrovores and stuff. And I feel like that's pretty similar here. Flamers, Beasts of Nurgle. But what I find is interesting is what demon players will choose as their lesser demon of choice. You know, is it Bloodletters? Is it Plague Bearers? Because Plague Bearers have two wounds now. Like, they're not easy to kill. And Demonettes are the fastest and the cheapest.
And they hit hard.
And they hit hard, but they're also very squishy. So I'm really interested to see where the demon players find their lesser demon of choice.
When I say hit hard, they're like -2 AP base, you know, on their claws.
And they got a bunch of attacks. Yeah. Yeah. They're only strength 3, but they're good rend. Like, they'll chop up Eldari units for days.
Yes. That's a good question. Like, what will be the actual core? Not the core keyword, but the core of the army. Which, Fiends of Slaanesh also have core. Like, they've sprinkled this core around. They got the Space Marine treatment. Like, oh, everybody's core.
Yeah, everybody's core. Yeah, oops.
Well, you got to think of it, though. It's like, they're all made from the same warp stuff. It's just kind of manifested in different ways. That can be themey.
Yeah.
So standout units for me, of course, Beast of Nurgle, I think, are strong. And you mentioned the points with the Beast of Nurgle. They definitely have priced out that healing ability as a premium.
But it is very unique. There is nothing else quite like that in the game. And it works really well with a bunch of different things. Well, to me, it feels like, you know, we have the concept of wound gating models now. To Abaddon being a perfect example, Catan's being another example, Ghazghal. You can only take X amount of wounds per phase.
Now, Bloodthirsters added to that list.
Yes, can have a exalted trait for that. It almost feels like this is a wound gating mechanic, whereas if you do not get past X breakpoint of wounds on a Beast of Nurgle, your damage gets nullified, gets essentially zeroed. I think it's a very strong mechanic, and I feel like just by default, because they have something that is so different to everybody else's, that is inherent value on the table, just because there's something so foreign, something that no one apart from that against that specific model, that specific unit, it's not something you have to worry about anywhere else. So I'm here for it. I think it's a really cool idea, really cool mechanic.
Demon's gonna have some tricks, man, especially when you're playing on a table with good terrain and there's lines of fire you can set up. I mean, that just kind of casual mention of throwing down a toughness 9 model with over 20 wounds down on turn 3 with a 4 plus and vulnerable save.
100%, dude.
That could be terrifying for board control.
Yeah, absolutely terrifying. And you're not wrong. There is a lot to this book that yet to be unpacked. I mean, I've heard some people say soul grinders aren't awful.
Yeah, it's going to be a standout unit is maybe a most improved stat line use case. Probably the soul grinder. But let me go back to the great unclean ones is that they are chunky models. You can look at that. But they actually, compared to other models, aren't that tall.
That's true.
So it's very possible that with decent amount of terrain, especially any of the stuff that's been released from Games Workshop recently, or even like some NBF stuff out there, you might be able to hide those great unclean ones walking around. And that makes them infinitely harder to deal with when you can't point every last cannon at them.
No, you can't.
So maybe it is there. And the same, maybe, I think, what's the tallest greater demon? Probably the Bloodthirsters and the Lords of Change.
Sorry, say again, mate?
The tallest greater demons. The ones that will be the most problematic to hide.
I think it's the Bloodthirster, right? Because their wings are projecting way above their heads.
And they're standing on rocks, like jumping.
Yeah, they got the tactical little mountains.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if this factors into people's list designs. I mean, but it certainly is going to factor into what you see on the table.
Absolutely.
So maybe it does. But yeah, so soul grinders, I think you're exactly right. Take a look at them, especially if you've had one in your collection for a long time and it hasn't been getting a lot of play.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the things with the fast moving Slaanesh stuff, Beast of Nurgle, and then Splitting Horrors. And I think for tournament players, like actual Splitting Horrors is probably what you'll see is just will be the go-to efficiency thing for a brief period of time until they figure it out, until it's good or not.
I'm waiting on Horrors. The mechanics sound good. The mechanics sound fun. The damage output doesn't excite me that much, the ranged DACA, but they got a 3+ invuln on a troop's choice. I feel that can just deny your damage. Essentially, it's got a 4+ come back to life to all intents and purposes with the splitting mechanic. But yeah, I'm going to wait and see on the horrors. I want them to be awesome, but I'm yet to be convinced.
Well, I can't wait to see what Chaos Players do with it. That's our show for this week. I know it's been, I really want to say thanks to our guest, taking time out, giving their insights. Always great to hear from the Community Spotlight folks.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, man, that's our hot takes. The regular crew will be back next week.
Yeah, enjoy Nova if you're there. If you're not, enjoy the coverage.
I hope folks do leave some 5-star reviews. Like, share, subscribe, and all that. We'll see y'all next week.
See you then.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!